Would you like to combine your engineering background with a future career in medicine? Interested in a highly innovative program that integrates medicine, engineering, early clinical exposure, and medical humanities? Listen into this podcast about the Carl Illinois College of Medicine, where I interview Carl Illinois's Dean of Admissions and Director of Curriculum. Welcome to the 305th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result, you get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." Not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before we meet our guest today, I want to invite you to Accepted's next webinar for med school applicants. Drumroll, please. Alicia McNeese-Namankar will present Create a Winning MCAS Application on April 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. The name pretty much says it all in terms of what's going to be presented, but for a little bit more information, Alicia will explore with you how to create an engaging personal statement, AC activities, write about your most meaningful experiences, as well as manage your time in this time-consuming, time-intensive process. Reserve your spot at accepted.com/305webinar. Now to today's podcast. Our guests today are Dr. Nora Few and Dr. William Pluta. Dr. Few has been with the University of Illinois since 1990, including 15 years at the UIC College of Medicine. She became the Carl Illinois College of Medicine's first director of admissions in 2017 and managed the enrollment of its first class in 2018. Dr. Will Pluta earned his PhD in educational psychology at Rutgers University in 2015. From 2012 to 2015, he worked at Columbia's College of Physicians and Surgeons as an education assessment and evaluation specialist. He then headed to Georgetown Medical for a year as assistant dean for assessment and has been Carl Illinois College of Medicine's first director of communications since 2017. Hello, Dr. Few and Dr. Pluta. Welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Hi, happy to be here.
Great. Good afternoon. Okay. I'm glad to speak with both of you. Now, I kind of stumbled across the Illinois Carl School of Medicine not too long ago. And I'm wondering, Dr. Pluta, can you give us an overview of the medical school program and curriculum?
So Carl Illinois College of Medicine is a four-year curriculum leading to an MD degree. What makes us special is a focus within that MD degree on engineering and innovation across the four-year curriculum. That is a core focus of our work. Now, I want to be clear, we are emphasizing the development of competent, caring, patient-centered physicians in our curriculum. Overall, it's a curriculum based around three phases. The first phase is the basic science phase that has engineering integrated into it, is organ systems based, and has early clinical exposure and leads up to a family medicine clerkship starting in the second year. It has a second year phase two of our curriculum is built around core clerkships. One of the special components of this core clerkship period is a significant amount of time for electives relatively early on so that students can begin to explore their interests, their career interests, their scholarly interests. Students are also encouraged through the idea course to generate innovative ideas that can impact healthcare and present those ideas to their peers and have them vetted. This is leading to the phase three of the curriculum, which has the relatively standard elective periods around medicine where students can begin to specialize, whether it's in surgery or medicine, as well as sub-I's. But students are expected to complete a capstone project and a data science project. And the overall idea is that those ideas in phase two of the curriculum that they get from the clerkships are developed over that phase. And then in phase three, they're able to start developing prototypes, developing and implementing innovative processes that might and have the potential to improve patient care. So it's a really exciting curriculum. It's really special the way we've begun to integrate engineering into the curriculum.
Why combine medicine specifically with engineering? Why not, I don't know, some other field?
So the emphasis on engineering is that engineers' emphasis on technology and this specific focus hopefully will accelerate innovation within the fields and change in medicine in a positive direction. And we think that those are the skills that can really move medicine forward.
What is the ideas course?
So the ideas
stood out in your intro. What was the ideas? What is an ideas course?
So the ideas course is a year-long course that is integrated into the core clerkship period of the curriculum. The students on right now Friday afternoons will come together and talk about the challenges that they're seeing in the clerkships on the wards, and start to come up with solutions to these problems and start doing work there and sharing those ideas. A component of this course is also engineering rounds. In engineering rounds, the students will round similar to how they would on a normal clerkship, but they'll have an engineer with them from our faculty who will help them think about problems in different ways from an engineering perspective. So hopefully we're beginning to marry medicine with the engineering to promote innovation.
And IDEA stands for Innovation, Design, Engineering, and Application. So we have
Can you give that again? IDEA is design.
Innovation, design, engineering, and application is IDEA.
Okay, so it's not just IDEA like IDEA, it's more than that. Okay, yes. Got it. Now, the website says that the curriculum is paradigm shifting. So obviously you have the engineering component, and that is definitely different. What other ways is it paradigm shifting?
And that's the critical part, is that engineering is built into everything that we do. So in the phase one of the curriculum, students are, it's a PBL-based curriculum. We have lots of engineering built into those cases that the students are working on. We have students engaging in engineering labs to develop their engineering skills as well as their ideas around how do you move an idea forward or an innovation forward within the health system. This emphasis on technology, everything that we do is a bit more pure here and aligned with our mission.
I can add to that. I would say that one of the words that Dr. Pluto used was integrated, and that you know, people will often ask us how we're different from other places. And because we were doing this from the very beginning, we could really integrate it. It's not layered or added onto the side like it might be if we hadn't had this opportunity to start from scratch.
That's, yeah, I can see that very definitely. Now, the Carl Illinois site discusses four pillars of the curriculum, right? Basic sciences, clinical sciences, engineering, and innovation. And then medical humanities. Basic and clinical sciences are taught in all medical schools. Engineering and innovation are definitely distinctive at Carl, Illinois, but including medical humanities as one of the pillars of the curriculum means that Carl, Illinois expects the students to use the right side of the brain as well as the left side of the brain. Now, in your mind, what is medical humanities and what role does it play and how is it as important as the other three pillars?
So we put it there as a pillar because it's critical in how the technology helps and supports how physicians interact with patients there. So ideally, some of this technology allows and helps facilitate physicians to have more time to interact with patients in a humanistic type way, or have the ability to have more information so that they're better prepared to interact with patients in the ways that patients like to be interacted with. So it is the core ethics about making decisions. There's also that component of it. So if we're thinking about implementing new technologies in the workplace, are we doing it in the right kinds of ways aligned with our values? Culture.
Yeah. And our ideas, when the students are doing ideas, they don't have to be a gadget. You know, we want them to take that innovative brain that they have, that problem-solving brain, and apply it to all sorts of problems. So we're very committed to graduating physicians who are humanistic, caring physicians.
Can you give me an example
of something that they could do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think of, unfortunately, when you think of technology and medicine, you don't see it immediately as a layperson. I don't see it as enhancing the humanistic quality of medical interactions, okay? I have a physician who I happen to really like, but lately I've noticed that when I go in to see him, he's looking at the computer screen, not at me, okay?
And so maybe one of the things that our students with their really smart, innovative engineering brains might do is say, okay, how are we going to make this work so that the physician can interact with the patient? I don't know what that means, but I'm sure that they could. Or maybe there's a way, it could also be quality assurance kinds of things. Maybe they find a way so that the cancer patient doesn't have to walk from one end of the hospital to the other and then back to the middle. And they can be efficiency things. There are all sorts of ways to use that innovative brain.
Right. I know on another note, I have a relative who did his undergrad in engineering and ultimately became a physician. Now, he's my age. He's not doing it now, right? So he took a systems approach to quality control in a very large HMO. And one of the innovations there is that if you go in, I don't know, because you have a pain or whatever, and they'll say, well, you know, you need to have your cholesterol checked, or you need to do whatever, you know, it's in his mind, it's and in the system, as a result of his efforts, it's all one integrated whole. It's one patient, right? Can you discuss the different phases of the curriculum? I mean, you went through, right? But there seemed to be a lot of overlap. It seemed like the didactic portion there seemed to be a lot of interlinking, which is not bad at all. Just could you go into that a little bit more?
So phase one is the traditional pre-clerkship period. It is organ systems based. So the courses, for example, are respiratory, renal, cardiovascular, clinical neuroscience, musculoskeletal. And it's built around problem-based learning. The problem-based learning cases where students are presented each week with a patient and are expected to drive their learning issues from those cases in a relatively independent way really make the course the week work and really drive the learning. We're not an entirely pure problem-based learning school, if you're familiar with problem-based learning. We do supplement with some lectures if there's content that is particularly difficult or isn't as well aligned with the case for the week that we feel needs to be there and students need to have some contact time around. One thing I should emphasize for the problem-based learning curriculum is that the courses are developed and the course directors are run as a team. And the team includes one physician, one basic scientist, and one engineer. So that's a really nice way to put a course together that I think has really led to some very good courses. Second part of the phase one period is the clinical component. So students have a course called physical diagnosis where they learn in small groups their core doctoring skills, so how to take a history, how to do a physical exam. They also have physician mentor, usually primary care, that students get to then practice those skills that they learn in their physical diagnosis course with the patients and are able to interact with the patients in a meaningful way and develop those skills very early on, I think in the second week of the curriculum. There's almost two phases to phase one of the curriculum. After the first year, students go into our family medicine clerkship. They still continue to take classes for half the time in this period, but students then will have the core family medicine clerkship experience about 3 half days per week. A really special part of that'll be starting this year that we're excited about is that it'll have a student-run clinic for one of those half afternoons. So students will have their own panel of patients and be responsible for checking up on patients and be the first contact with many of the patients in our community.
This is like in the first few weeks, right?
This second year is when the students have their own clinic.
Got it.
Part of their family medicine clerkship.
But they are starting their clinical experiences in week two.
Got it. All right. And then the
one thing that might be interesting for your listeners is that if you go to our website, which I know you're going to ask us about later, so we can stick that at the end. But if they go to our website, one of the things that we have on there is, I think we've got 5 so far, maybe little blogs from students in the first year class talking about various aspects of being a student here. And one of the students does concentrate on how exciting it was to start that clinical work right away.
All right. Can you possibly send me afterwards also a link to the blog?
Yes, sure. I can send you the website and all the little pieces.
Okay, that'd be great. Now, what are the threads in the Carle, Illinois curriculum? There's phases, there's threads. What's the difference?
The threads are the content that spans the entire curriculum. So the two big ones, we call them internally the gorilla threads, are engineering and medical ethics and humanities. And those are the areas that we pay special attention to make sure they're integrated across all 4 years of instruction. The other threads, I guess the little baby threads, are the core basic science content. So we have a thread director who, since we're organ systems, make sure that anatomy is covered appropriately across all the organ systems courses, that genetics is integrated into all the courses in an appropriate way, pathology, physiology, the traditional disciplines. So we have directors that are checking in to make sure that we're not missing anything and helping us balance the integration of engineering with core medical content.
For the ethics thread, one of the gorilla threads, I call it the gold and purple thread, you know, that's always through a tapestry that looks really lovely. Again, just like we talked about at the beginning about integration of engineering, we've been so fortunate to be able to start this curriculum from the beginning and to say from the beginning, medical ethics and humanities will be part of the curriculum, not a thing that you add on for 2 days at the end of first year, and it's not an add-on, it's in there. And so the ethics and humanities thread members have two main responsibilities. One is to work with the course directors and to make sure that we help them to integrate ethical issues into their cases, or even bring up ethical issues that could possibly be a tangent to that case. And then we also have something for an hour a week that's usually a facilitated discussion, and it could be about so many things. Lately we've had a couple on end of life care and end of life decision making, because we just finished the neuro unit, so we're talking about strokes and the physicians generally. Sometimes it's campus faculty members, but the physicians or faculty members who lead those are talking about their real life experiences. You know, I had a patient 2 weeks ago. This is what happened. This is how the family felt. What would you do if you had this much information? What questions would you ask? How do you go forward? And then it's always related to whatever they're doing in their problem-based learning that week. So it's very relevant. They can really feel it.
Makes sense. I also wonder if, you know, I think the most common feedback I've ever heard from medical school students is that going to medical school is like trying to drink from a fire hydrant, right? Okay. So here you're adding engineering components, you're adding medical humanities components to the curriculum, or seemingly adding them, and it's like, well, how can you fit it all in given
because
all the information?
Integrating and weaving.
I think it also helps that we have a clear mission too around the engineering. I think many medical schools try to be a little bit of everything. They might say, oh, we're going to be the best at population health. We're going to have, you know, some kind of technology focus. We're going to produce, you know, future researchers, global health, you name it. Mm-hmm. And they try to get a little bit in there of everything, but we're a little bit more streamlined. And it's not to say we don't care about these things and we wouldn't support students that have interest in these areas, but we know where our values are.
And everybody's doing it.
And everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
What is the wellness program for Carle, Illinois students? That was something that caught my eye when I was preparing for the call.
I'll start with that and we'll kind of course jump in at any time. But this is another thing that from the beginning we said, okay, if we look at medical school, we know how hard it is. We know how much stress students are under. We know that there are high suicide rates. We want to be, we don't want to be reactive in that way. We want wellness to be a basic integrated part of what we do. So we have an hour set aside for wellness every single week. And then we also try to integrate it into all activities. We help the students to take advantage of a lot of things that are on campus. And if students want to go to our website again, at the main website, they can then go to Student Life and then look at the wellness program and they can see our wellness wheel. So our wellness wheel has 9 areas. And I know lots of people have wheels. This is not a new concept, but we've made ours particularly focused on what we think is important for our students. So the 9 areas in the wheel are financial, intellectual, innovation, emotional, social, spiritual, vocational, environmental, physical. So no matter how you want to make your categories, I think that the point is that the categories we did make are very comprehensive. And we look at all of those and try to focus all of that on the student. So it's about their wellness. When we have the weekly event, it's called Thrive. And Thrive is designed primarily by students. So they help decide. We have two student leaders who help to decide what should happen at Thrive. Again, as we were brainstorming about what possible things could happen at Thrive, we came up with 5 themes. So these are also on the website, but the themes are know your patients, know your community, burnout prevention and resiliency training, student success and residency preparedness, let's get active at the medical school, and introduction to integrative medicine. And so every Wednesday, there will be something about one of those themes. And this week, it happens to be academic affairs is coming in to talk to us about a course that the students will be taking this time in their second year on step one preparation. Because, of course, we all know that that's something that causes a lot of anxiety. And this isn't the first time they've talked about it, but this is the first time that they've come to Thrive to spend the whole lunch hour saying, hey, these are the things we're going to be doing for you. This is why you don't need to worry. We're already having you do whatever. Sometimes we have nice things like yoga or dance. Pilates or ballroom dancing.
Yeah. That can be fun. But I also wonder, yeah. I mean, one of the things that medical school is notorious for, especially as you advance, I think, is a certain, I had to go through it, you got to go through it too, kind of culture, right? I suffered as a third year or a fourth year or as an intern or whatever. Is part of your focus here to prevent that kind of culture from developing? Obviously, you can't control what's going to happen in residency, but at least for third and fourth year students, is that part of what's going on?
Absolutely. And we can't control what's going to happen at the hospital. There will always be physicians who feel that way, although hopefully that's becoming a little less of a problem. But yes, absolutely. If we can, again, we've got this wonderful opportunity to start a culture from the beginning and to say, we all know this is really important for you. We believe we're going to support you. You need to take time to make sure that you're healthy. Here are some ways you can do it.
Now, sounds great. Sign me up. How do I get in, Dr. Few? How is the application? How is the application process at Carle, Illinois, different due to its unique focus? Or should I say foci? Because it seems like there's several of them.
Perhaps, yes. We are looking for a somewhat different profile in our students. And I do think that this is a place where we are looking for more, but we also are looking for a different balance. When we thought about the admissions process, we, my colleague Heather Wright and I, who she designed more of it than I did, we thought about what had we each experienced as we had done admissions for other colleges of medicine. What did we think was not good? What did the literature tell us was not good? And again, perfect opportunity. Start from the beginning. Do what you want to do. Clean slate. It was quite lovely. And so we, of course, had to choose students who were going to be successful here. What does that mean? Well, students who are going to be successful here are going to have many of the same characteristics of students who are successful at any other medical school. Although I can talk in a bit about how we do emphasize things differently. But they need to take an MCAT. They need to have certain competencies in their academic background. But then in addition to that, we wanted students with that innovative way of looking at life and medicine. So where to start? All right, we were very committed to doing holistic review as per the AAMC holistic review and their guidelines that everyone can look at online. We wanted to be really careful that we were truly measuring the things that we thought we were measuring. So we had a good opportunity here to say, does a certain test really tell us whether a student will be a better physician? Or is that just something that we're using as an excuse to have a metric? We worked really hard at our rubrics that we would use. And we also thought,
what do you mean by rubrics in this case?
Oh, okay. So when our faculty are doing the holistic review, so every student is filling out an AMCAS, and there are things that every medical school is looking for in that AMCAS. I think that they're not always well defined. Now, so somebody knows exactly what they want, but they're not always well defined. They're not always well defined to the faculty. So we thought about what is it that we're looking for. And, you know, we're not going to tell exactly what those things are. Everyone's going to tell us that's them. But we have a number of things that we're looking for. And then in each of those categories, we say, all right, here are all the things that are in the AMCAS that could say something about that. And here's something that we consider to be kind of a baseline. And here's something that's better, and here's something that's outstanding. And we built rubrics so that our faculty could be consistent, because something else that's almost as important as what you're measuring is measuring it consistently and accurately as much as possible. And of course, we're looking at soft things. You know, we're looking at the amount of research, or how much volunteering, or were you involved in the community, or have you traveled a long distance in order to get to this place of success. Those are all very important things, but we want our faculty to look at them carefully and consistently from faculty member to faculty member, from time to time. So we have very good rubrics for looking at the AAMC information, the MCAS information. We also wanted to be very careful of bias. And there are many, many instances where people have shown that an MCAT does bias, knowing an MCAT does bias how you feel about that application. And so our reviewers in the first stage of review do not know that person's MCAT. They have the transcript, so they could figure out the GPA if they wanted to. And, you know, they can see A's, D's, whatever, but they're not going to see the difference between a 3.9 and a 3.6, perhaps. We're not asking them to focus on that. We're asking them to focus on all of these other things that are in the rubric. So I think that helps tremendously. And then finally, penultimately, we consider the MCAT and GPA to be important, but probably less important than most schools do. So everybody's going to have an algorithm that they use. Everybody's going to put GPA information and MCAT information into that algorithm. For us, that is only 50% of the decision, which is much, much less than for most medical schools. We feel it's important, but we feel that we can find the right student for us in many other ways. And I think that, you know, I can talk later perhaps about our secondary application. There are many ways that it's unique as well.
That's actually my next question.
Oh,
what
okay.
is your secondary application like?
So I have read, I think, about 10 million essays that were applications to medical school, or at least it feels like it. And I really am not sure what I learned. I might have learned that that person had someone who was very helpful in editing that essay for them. You know, I really don't know what I learned about the person. And we wanted to be able to really, really see our students, to really know who they are. And we thought, okay, we're supposed to be an innovative school. So we should be doing a secondary application that's innovative and non-traditional. The idea we came up with was we do not do essays. Instead, we do a portfolio. And the portfolio is reflective of our values as a school. So we did it a little differently the first year. The first year we had competence as one of our values in the portfolio. And then every year we do a day-long retreat and survey our faculty and get information from them. And last year they said, you don't need to have competence in the secondary application. That's what all the rest of the application is. So
what is a portfolio in this context?
Well,
I know what it is for artists.
Right. A portfolio to me is show and tell for adults. And so what we ask the students to do is to think about three of our values. And the first one, which should happen at every medical school and be a part of the portfolio, the inner portfolio for every medical student, is compassion. And then the other two that are more unique to our medical school, though not exclusively for us, are curiosity and creativity. So we say to the students, what we would like you to do is present us with what we call an artifact. So it's something that can be printed on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. We don't print it, but we could. No links. We want this to be as simple for our, we want our faculty to be able to review the applications anywhere. So 8.5 by 11, something. And then you have up to 250 words, although we may make that less in the future, up to 250 words to talk about that. So compassion, a lot of students would give us a collage of a number of different things that they had done. And then in their 250 words, they'd talk about that. But some students wrote poetry. Some students, I had a student who did like a graphic novel that moved from one to the next for the three stages of the three different artifacts for the portfolio. We've had many, many variations, and there's no right way to do it. But what I'll often say to students who feel like this is a little intimidating is I'll say, look, I just want you to go back to how you felt in third grade. And when it was show and tell in third grade, did you worry? Well, maybe some of you did, but did you worry about what the teacher wanted? No, you thought about what do I want to bring to school? What makes me excited? What do I want to show all my friends? And so that's what we want the portfolio to be. Show us who you are. Let your real self shine through so that we can see, are you a curious, creative, compassionate person who will fit in our medical school, where those are all the things we value. We don't just value being an engineer or necessarily being an engineer. You know, maybe you have other quantitative skills. We also want you to be compassionate. We want you to be able to marry those things together and come up with something exciting in your idea project. We also, in the secondary application, ask students to evaluate their competency. And I'll explain what that means. As you know, as most people listening to this podcast will know, if you say in a medical school that something is a required course, then I, as an admissions person, must enforce that. I have to only admit people who have that required course. And we felt that since we were asking for more from our students, we maybe needed to have a little more flexibility as well. So we decided that we wanted to make it easier for people to become competent in the things we felt they needed to be competent in various ways. So if you go to our website, you'll see a list of suggested courses, not required courses. Those suggested courses will basically be all the courses that most medical schools have. But in addition to that, we say that we would like our applicants to show competency in the area of multivariate calculus, the area of linear algebra, and the area of, now I'm really scared, I'm forgetting what the third one is. What did I say? Algebra, calculus, a DFEQ, differential equations. We ask them to show competency. So all of those things will be written down. There's a drop-down menu beside it. And the applicant can tell me, that is on my transcript. I covered linear algebra in, and it may be a linear algebra course or it may be an engineering course. So they can do that for each course, or they can say, I have no experience in that, and that does put them at a disadvantage. I don't have competency yet, but I'm registered for that in the spring. Or they can say, I'm competent, but I gained my competency in another way. And if that is the case, they get the opportunity to upload something. And that something could be, here's the paper on which I was first author and a note from my PI saying, yep, in order to do this work, Joe definitely had to have a very strong understanding of linear algebra. Or it could be a community college course, or it could be an online course and you upload the certificate. We recognize that there are many, many ways to become competent. For some of our students, we have a slightly older population in our students with more students who have been out in the workforce for a while. It could be, I did that at my job for 2 years. Here's my job evaluation, or here's a letter from my supervisor.
So I could
talk about the secondary forever, but I think I might have covered the basics. What's not clear?
No, I think it's very clear. I was going to ask, what's the difference between competency and a prerequisite? But I think you answered that question in your response. Competency would be a certain knowledge of a certain field. Well, a prerequisite is I took this class. Right. So that is directly relates to the flexibility that you spoke about, you know, in talking about the secondary. But the question remains, what if somebody doesn't have an engineering background, or they haven't had these kinds of quantitative classes, and they're still interested in going to Carl, Illinois? Would you want them to take the courses?
I would like them to show me competency in some way, yes.
Okay.
Because it really is the truth that they are not going to be as competitive without those competencies as someone who does have them. And if that, you know, someone's missing one, that's maybe not a problem, but if someone's missing four, that's definitely a problem. And again, I would really encourage students who are thinking of applying to truly send us information to show us how they are competent. But if someone is thinking of applying for the class that enters the summer of 20 and they don't have certain courses right now, I would say you don't have to take them at your university. You know, maybe you're taking all the courses you can get. Take them at community college. Do an online course. We're looking for competence. We're not looking necessarily for something on your transcript.
Got it. Well, that is a difference. And what about the interview? I understand you have a very distinctive interview.
Well, we kind of don't have one in a way. So
okay.
we do have. As a part of our secondary application, we do have what we're calling a video interview. And students who have read a lot about medical education will know that this is something that emergency medicine residency programs have been doing for 3 years now, maybe, and that some other residencies are piloting or thinking of doing. What we have is a set of 5 questions. And these are also based on other values that Carl, Illinois has. The students do not get the questions well ahead of time. we also are trying to evaluate, how do you operate under pressure and can you think on your feet? And are you doing this yourself? So they can log in when they feel that they're ready to take this experience, and they will be given the questions, and then they will have 5 minutes to think about those five questions. They can write notes, they can do whatever they want, 5 minutes. They could start earlier if they want, but when the 5 minutes are up, the recording will start. And they have 6 minutes then to go through those five questions and answer them as well as they can. The first year we gave students 2 attempts, and it was quite clear that many of those who did 2 attempts had taken a very long time off between the attempts and scripted something. And so we now say, if something happens, there's a real problem with your recording, let us know. We can see what you've done. So we know if that's the truth or not. And if it is, we will give you a second chance. But generally, it's 1 attempt, because that's part of the whole deal. We're trying to see what you can do on your feet. But as far as a regular interview, we don't do that either. Another thing that's very innovative for us, and partly this happened out of necessity because we didn't have our accreditation when we were starting our first cycle. We didn't yet have our accreditation, so we couldn't make any decisions, and deciding who will come for an interview is a decision. But once again, we looked at the literature and we looked at some of the experiences that there were some kind of practical experiments that happened in medical education. And we were able to see 2 things. One, that based on things that have happened in real life, where we've had kind of a natural experiment, we can see that the interview is not giving us, the medical school, much, if any, information at all. We are not making different decisions because of that interview in almost all cases. The other thing that we did learn is that interviews are very biased, and we're absolutely committed to making our process as free of bias as we possibly can. So we said, okay, let's think about this. What happens during an interview day? And we decided that we realized that the thing that was good about an interview day is the opportunity for the students to come and see us. Yeah. You know, they can talk to Dr. Pluta about the curriculum. They can see the campus. They can see where they will be. We can show them our absolutely fabulous Sim Center. There are a lot of things like that we can do. So we said, okay, that's what we're going to do. We are going to have an opportunity for our strongest candidates to come here, to meet faculty and students, to learn more about our program, to visit, to actually participate in some events that will be similar to what they will do as a student, and to make the final decision, is this where I want to be? Is it where I fit? Because it is a two-sided decision here, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So we decided that we would have something that we call showcases. And they are day-long events. They are invitation only. So after our faculty have, after we have had 2 faculty read and evaluate an application, then we're not anywhere near finished our process, but still we have a good idea of how they're going to stand. And we invite our top candidates to come and spend a day with us. And during that day, they'll do a good bit of listening, more listening than they would do as a medical student at our school. But we will talk to them about our clinical integration. We'll talk to them about patient impact and how the IDEA project or other aspects of our curriculum can help with patient impact. We'll have student affairs talk to them. We'll have academic affairs talk to them. We will have them go over to our Sim Center where they can play with virtual reality and they can see what we're doing over there, what we're allowing the students to learn in their first year. We have lunch with current students, not the first year, but this year. Lunch with faculty, talk about wellness, our wellness program. And then perhaps most interesting, we do breakout sessions in the afternoon where in one breakout that are repeated. So each student will have one time where they go with their group to the hospital, meet with some people at the hospital, see some things that are happening at the hospital. And then another time where they will meet in a group of about 10 with one of our trained facilitators who teaches every day in our curriculum. And they will do a case, a short problem-based learning case that's been designed especially for this showcase so that they can see what it really would be like to be a student doing PBL and learning in this way. So I think that we have a really good way to show them what we're all about so that students can make an informed decision. But we're not, at least at this time, doing any kind of interviewing during that day.
Well, it seems like the video interview has replaced the in-person interview. Am I pretty much correct on that?
To a certain extent. And I think that the difference is that, of course, medical schools vary a great deal. But in many medical schools, the people who do the interviews are not the people who review the application. They often don't have nearly as much training as the people who review the application. And they're just getting a cursory look at the student's application after they've already been invited to interview, and then they do the interview piece. And so by integrating this into the rest of our evaluation and by asking our faculty to do it last, we think that we're changing the emphasis and allowing it to be more of a, I can't think of the right word, but just kind of really checking to make sure that perceptions were good.
Right. The picture portrayed in the written application is reflected in the video. And are the questions posed in the video interview, do they reflect the problem-based learning focus at Carl?
I think the easiest way for me to answer that without revealing too much about what we're asking is to say that two other really important values for us are diversity and collaboration. Those will definitely be addressed in the questions. And then we also do a lot of behavioral type questions. So very similar to the kind of thing that people will see in a job interview at a hospital or in a residency application or a residency interview.
Tell us about a time when you talk about behavioral, tell us about a time when you encountered this or you handled this or.
Yeah. What did you learn? What did you do?
Right. Yeah. And in terms of the visitation day, I forget the term you use for
showcase.
Showcase. Right. Now it sounds like the showcase is an opportunity for Carl Illinois to showcase itself and for applicants to evaluate Carl Illinois. Are you also evaluating the applicants and their interactions with you during that day?
Not really at this time, but that is something that we may incorporate in the future.
How has the first year gone?
Whew, that's a you question.
I don't want you to go to sleep. I mean, you know.
We've been very pleased with how it's been going. The students are incredibly engaged. Obviously, it's the first year, so there's those first year kinks to work out that future classes will benefit from the experiences of this first year. But I mean, the students are getting an amazing clinical experience that I've never seen anywhere else. I mean, it's interesting. I've spent the first half of this interview talking about how interesting the engineering and how it's integrated in, but the amount of clinical exposure the students have is just amazing. And we get love notes from the physicians that they're paired with, saying, oh, so-and-so did just such a lovely job and actually really helped me with this problem, you know, with whatever skills that they bring to the table, often around the humanistic side of things that we were talking about too. So that's been lovely. The students are performing as we would expect for first year medical students on our exams and our different assessments. So we're quite pleased with how the students are progressing, and we're learning a lot from them.
They're very invested.
They're very invested.
And that's I don't know why I thought of this when Dr. Pluta was answering that question, but in addition to being with the clinical mentors, preceptors, mm-hmm. They've also done a lot of things where they see the practicality of some of the things that we're talking to them about. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, this just jumped into my mind as you
Can
were
you
talking.
Can you give an example?
About, yeah, like in cardiology, the student, I know, because I actually got a note from someone about a patient that I know. I got a note from a patient about how wonderful the student was.
Oh, wow.
They went to cardio rehab and they interviewed people at cardio rehab. And, you know, to talking about making the ethics real and making the problems real and helping you to understand why the things you're learning in class are really important. You know, they're doing things like this all the time. They're working with respiratory therapists. There are a lot of practical things.
What has surprised you most about the first year?
So we talked about the admissions process and the emphasis on engineering and some of the quantitative skills. And we just, at least I think the people responsible for developing the curriculum weren't sure what we were going to get from the students. You know, were they, you know, who are these engineering physicians going to be? And they've ended up being, again, more patient-centered and more humanistic than
stereotypically
might have thought. I mean, I certainly probably know better than to think that, but they're very patient-centered. They're very in the good ways, and then they're also very much like medical students in all the ways that you would expect. It wasn't clear early on if they would say, you know, give us more engineering or something along those lines, and they haven't done that.
No, they know they're here to learn medicine.
Yep, they know the responsibilities that they'll have as physicians, so they take that incredibly seriously. So
it is an enormous responsibility. What advice do either of you have, but I guess we'll start with Dr. Few on this one. What advice do you have for applicants interested in applying to Carle, Illinois in the upcoming 2019-2020 application cycle? In other words, this summer.
Yes. So I mentioned one of the most important things, which is it does really help your application to have the competencies and that you don't have to take a full-blown, expensive university course. You can do this in a more efficient, less expensive way, but you are going to be more competitive with more of those competencies under your belt. So if you don't have them, take one over the summer, maybe do something in the fall. You can always tell us that you haven't finished it yet, but it's in progress, and that's perfectly acceptable. I do want to give one reminder it's not a reminder if you've looked at our website, but something that I didn't mention earlier was that at this time, until we have graduated our first class, we are restricted in that we can only accept students who are either permanent residents or U.S. citizens. So unfortunately, that's something for students and advisors to be aware of, that at this time, that's the case. And
do you have a preference for Illinois residents?
We do not. Absolutely do not. In fact, we have very few in the first year class.
Okay, so there's no in-state versus out-of-state?
No, there is a slight difference in tuition, okay. But there's absolutely, it's not something that is known in the admissions process. Also, to get a secondary application, you need a 498 or more on your MCAT. So think about when you're going to take your MCAT. Don't do it too early. But on the other hand, again, we want to level the playing field as much as we can and make sure that there isn't a great advantage for someone who perhaps has the financial means to take the MCAT many, many, many times and then use their best score out of many. So what we do is we use, if you've got two scores, we use your highest. If you've got three or more scores, we use an average. So think carefully about when you're going to take it, because just taking it for practice, if you then have to take it several times afterwards, yeah, it's not the best.
Not a good idea. No.
Yeah.
No.
And I think that students should think really seriously about whether PBL is something that they like. This way of learning is different, and some people think it's the best thing ever, and some people find it uncomfortable, and so therefore the showcases are really helpful for that. And then, does our mission speak to you?
I think that would also relate, by the way, to having those quantitative competencies. You know, if you don't have them, I don't think you know if that mission does speak to you.
Right. And then the last thing that I can say is for 2020, we will have early decision. So we haven't had that. We didn't want to have too many new things happening at once, but we will be implementing early decision for 2020.
And what will be the early decision deadline?
Ooh, is it I don't remember.
I'm sure it'll be on your website. So
yes, I think it's October 1st.
Okay. All right. Now, what advice would you have for those planning for the future and interested in integrating humanism and engineering and medicine and interested in Carl, Illinois, but not planning to apply in 3 months, maybe planning to apply in 15 months or whatever it works out?
Okay. Well, I'd like to give a shout out to the NIAHP and the pre-health advisors and say, if you're not working with your pre-health advisor, you probably should. That's really pretty crucial. And now's the time to do it early. The earlier, the better. I would suggest that students go to the AAMC website, the Association of American Medical Colleges, and look at a model that they have online that they call the Experiences Attributes Metrics Model, which is their model for holistic review. Most schools are using that. We are absolutely using it. We feel that that's very important. So if you see a big gap there, maybe that's something that you should think about. General advice is to take your MCAT 18 months before you expect to enroll. And then I would think about the competencies. Plus, there's lots of information online about our application process, and you might want to review that as well.
What about, can students at Carl, Illinois earn a MS in engineering while pursuing their MD, or not yet, or not on the drawing board?
A formal part of the curriculum. If someone was really interested in that, we could develop an individualized plan to support those goals.
All right.
And I think that it's important that one of the things, we thought about this very carefully, and one of the things that we would require, I think it would be require, is that the student take step one before they move into that. Mm-hmm. So that it's breaking at a good spot, so that it's going to give them the best education possible and the best residency application possible if that's what they want to do.
Right. What would you have liked me to ask that I haven't asked you?
One thing that I thought about, and again, this will go to the website, is that we also have, I think it's five webinars on the admissions website.
Okay.
So that could be really helpful to students. We've got one that's on the competency-based admissions and why we use it, one on problem-based learning for success, one on medical education through the lens of engineering, which is Dr. Pluta talking about the curriculum, experiential learning through medical simulation, and then Dr. Pluta with another of our colleagues talking about how Carl, Illinois prepares you for step one. So I think those can be really helpful for students as well.
Okay, sounds good. So Dr. Few and Dr. Pluta, I want to thank you both so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed learning about Carl, Illinois College of Medicine and its highly innovative program. I'm sure that we've just whetted listeners' appetites, and you've mentioned several sites or several resources for them. Where can they learn more? What is the URL that you promised earlier?
Okay. So the URL is HTTPS. It's medicine.illinois.edu. And then under that, you'll see several sections. So you'll see sections about education, sections about students. I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
All right. Sounds good. So thanks again. Listener, you'll find links in the show notes at exhibit.com/305 to the Carl, Illinois College of Medicine, as well as to related resources and podcasts. Oh, yes. And quick reminder to register for our upcoming webinar, Create a Winning MCAS Application, which you can do at accepted.com/305webinar or from the show notes at accepted.com/305. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 305th episode. If you found this show helpful, subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcatcher you prefer. So don't miss anything and subscribe at, you guessed it, accepted.com/305. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.